I am Dustin Brown. I am a business major for Western Carolina University. My professor is Dr. Lam, and this is for ENT 640. And today I have with me Mark Schmidt, who is the director of Small Business Center for Cochise College. So, Mr. Schmidt, how are you doing today?
Good.
So, how long have you been in the business community?
Started out, I used to manage large volume grocery stores, actually, in Texas. Worked for Jewel Foods. And then the stores I managed were 240, 250 employees. We were doing about $1 million a week in sales. And my specialty was open and closing stores. And so I have two children. One was born in Providence, Rhode Island. The other one was born in Merced, California. And so I made a promise to my wife, once the kids started school, we moved 37 times in 11 years. Because that's what you do. You open and close stores. And anyway, merchandising was my specialty. They would bring me in to set and merchandise the stores. But anyway, so I actually came to Sierra Vista almost 30 years ago and hired out for Bayless, which was a grocery chain that was here. It was a family-owned company. It had 50 stores. Okay. And there was a store here that they were building, and they brought me in to help them merchandise the store. And I'd met someone during the process, and me and him started a business. And actually, I bought a house, and I'm still living in that same house. And so for 25 years, I ran the JCPenney catalog desk. I had a Southwest gift shop. I had a collection agency. I had a UPS shipping store. I had a couple road coaches. I had a tuxedo rental store. There was other businesses entwined with it. We were installing satellite dishes. We did computer networking. We sold office supplies to Ford Chuka, government contracting kind of stuff. And after 25 years of that, someone said, man, you're pretty good at starting businesses. And a position came open at the college it was a business analyst position. And so I decided to switch careers and took it. That was 10 years ago. And so it was about a year and a half later, the director had got a job. She actually works for EDF. We write a weekly newspaper column called Ask M&M. Okay. I think we're on week number 700. So I still work with her. And it's kind of like how I started doing that is my mother-in-law went to high school with Ann Landers. And I don't care about your personal life. This is more about a business question. So the questions that we write about every week, could be a question someone might have asked us a year ago, or it could have been that week. But of course, we disguise their names. And it's pretty much they ask a question about business, and then we answer it in that column. So I still work with Mignon, but I've been the director here for it's 11 years. In the 11 years that I've been here, we've actually started over 500 businesses. For every 13 people that come into this office, just like you, three of them actually start a business. So we've done one a week. We've helped someone start a business every week for the last 10 years. From that, it's led to the creation of a new job every other day for the last 10 years. Some of the other things we do is we assist them with capital and access to capital and liquidity. We do roughly between $6 and $7 million a year where people get loans. And then the second one that we do is increase in sales. And we do between $6 and $7 million annually to help small businesses increase sales. And so that's kind of some of the things that we kind of do out of this office. It's live. We're dealing with people now. I dealt with two people yesterday. They're probably going to lose their business, because of this whole thing. So there's good and there's bad to it. But the whole thing, too, is if you're going to get out of a business, there's a proper way to do that, just like getting into your business. So that's kind of a little bit in a nutshell, and it's A to Z. We help people fill out TPT. We help people with legal entities. We help people with employee handbooks. We help people get loans. We help people buy businesses. We help people sell businesses. We get into employee evaluations. It's pretty much whatever the person comes in here wanting to do, we're going to help them do it. We're part of a network. There's 1,000 SBDC offices across the United States, and we're funded by the SBA, and there are 63 regional centers. And basically, there's one in every state, but places like Texas or California have multiple locations because of the size. In Arizona, our lead center is in Phoenix. And our model in Arizona, there's 13 community colleges, and our hosts are the community colleges in the state of Arizona. And so that's kind of our model for our region, of the 63 regions, we're one of them. And so that's why I'm here at Cochise College, is because of that. I think we've been around for about 35 years doing this.
So this is a nationwide thing?
Yeah, it's okay. A national thing.
Okay, because when I first was, you know, when I was working on my undergrad, you know, I dug into different things and I found out about, you know, this local chapter here. I mean, I've been here for 3 years, you know, military moves you around all the time, but I've been here for 3 years. So I saw it and I looked at it, but at the time it wasn't something that I needed. I just knew that it was a resource. I was like, hey, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. But you're saying this is a full-blown nationwide thing. Yeah.
They say that there's an SBDC office 60 miles from any business in the United States. I challenge that when you get into places like South Dakota or
Alaska. Yeah.
But they have an office in Anchorage, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the major cities, they're going to have an office there. We're also in Guam, you know, in places like that too, where you wouldn't think some of the territories were in there too. That's where they get that 63. There's a few other ones.
So you. They pretty much, they asked you, you know, to come to work for the SBDC. Yep. I'm dyslexic, so I'll butcher
That's
things
okay.
all the times. So the Small Business Development Center. So not only with that, you're an instructor here as well?
I used to be the department chair of all the business classes.
Okay.
I stopped doing that about 2 years ago.
Okay.
To focus more just on this. The academic side I think that's the thing why we're so successful, is because of 25 years of business ownership.
Yes, sir.
And then also to the educational side, we're able to apply that to it as well. But I actually like the live working more with businesses than the academic side. And so that's why I kind of went back to just do this more full time. But we still interact with all the instructors and, you know, from the business classes. There's internship things that, you know, we sometimes deal with them, or sometimes we'll even speak in their classes.
Basically, I asked one question, you answered about 10 of them straight off the bat. So now I'm trying to like skip through and be like, okay, what else can I talk about here? So basically, if I'm understanding this right, you know, a small business owner, whether they already have a business, whether they're looking to expand, whether they're looking to open, they're trying to figure out if it's time to liquidate. This is a resource they can just come in and talk with you.
Yeah.
The funding, I'm trying to figure out, is there like a fee for this, or is this funded through the state?
We're actually grant funded through the SBA in Washington, D.C. And then Cochise College, who is our host, it's a grant. And they actually cash match, dollar for dollar, the monies that we get from this SBDC or the SBA. And what we're here for, and why the college likes us, is we're part of community college. We're their community outreach, where we're actually helping. If businesses are stronger, the community will be stronger and more people can take classes. It's kind of,
it
goes hand in hand. It really does.
One hand washes the other. Yeah. It makes complete sense. So you say on average about one a week you work with different businesses?
Oh, no. We probably do. Well, last annual clients that we see for a one-hour visit, I think last year we had 531.
Wow.
Out of this office. It's quite a big number when you really look at it. There's only 120,000 people. The city of Sierra Vista has 3,600 established business licenses. We actually last year we helped start 54 businesses. We usually do around that number every year, because we do one a week.
Okay.
And so now with the coronavirus thing going on, I'm at 431 people that we've helped since the beginning of the year. You know, so the workload, we're kind of like your ventilator
and yeah.
personal protection equipment.
Yep.
We are the front line for how do you get your EIDL loan or how do you get your PPP or the emergency advance loan. And then we also do guide them and counsel them on, you know, unemployment and stuff like that, and how to go about getting that. And it's an interesting thing is what I've been working with lately, there's about six people I'm working with that now is an opportunity to possibly purchase buildings. And so, yeah, some people have really been devastated by this, but there's been some businesses that they're okay. They've been doing well, you know, through this thing. Matter of fact, some of them have had even increases in sales. But the ones that actually have managed their cash and were doing good business, opportunities are coming up to maybe purchase their building, you know, because the landlord might own other buildings having problems.
Yeah.
You know, so there's six people I'm working with right now just on purchasing an existing building.
So they want to, like, the one that they're currently renting, just buying themselves out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna ask basically like for a model, you know, of the model business owner that comes in here. Like, what would be a great success? You know, someone comes in here, and you know they come asking for help, trying to save their business. What would be a good example of one of those businesses? You don't have to name the exact business, but
someone that comes in here there's really an interesting one is if they take advantage of the PPP, Payroll Protection Program,
okay,
and mix it with the EIDL loan, Economic Injury Disaster. The Economic Injury Disaster is actually a loan from the U.S. Treasury, and they don't even start making payments until a year from the day they're funded, meaning money in the bank. All the paperwork is done and money is in the bank. And then it's 3.75% interest amortized over 30 years. So what a great loan for them. For instance, then the other one, the Payroll Protection Program, is you figure your payroll monthly and then you multiply that number times 2.5. And so if a person works these things in conjunction, you actually have 2 months of operating expenses. And the payroll protection one, if you spend your money correctly, it's forgiven. You don't have to pay that back. So imagine if you were a business that you had a payroll, it's like the person that was in here yesterday, their PPP was $124,000. And so then their EIDL loan was $150,000. And so in conjunction of those things, they've positioned themselves way better than they've ever been since they've been in business. Because now they actually do have some cash to actually negotiate with. And some of these businesses, too, they just redid the time that you have to start spending the payroll. It was 8 weeks, and a lot of people, they aren't really open full-blown. It wasn't like you turned on the faucet and it came gushing out. Business is trickling in, so they can't bring back all of their people on the payroll, or they'll just be standing around. And so that 8-week time period, they kind of had to bring them back to have it be forgiven. And so now they've changed that, and they're giving them a longer time period so they can bring the people back gradually. And then 75% of their money that they got had to go to payroll. Now it's only 60%. So they could spend that other 40% on rent, mortgage interest, utilities, and utilities also equals your cell phone, your internet connection,
sure,
as well as gas and water, you know, and sewer. And so the people that, you know, it's kind of a funny thing too, is the people that had good accounting are in better position. The ones that had terrible accounting, they're probably taking cash, not reporting all their sales, calling employees, 1099 workers, you know, so
yeah,
and doing that. Those are the people that are having difficulty struggling now. And then, of course, there are just some businesses that they're like, God, do I really need this office? Working from my home, it was okay. You know what I mean? And there were some people that was like, you know, maybe even with our offices, I still have people working remotely because it's just a better deal.
Yeah.
You know, for them. And quite honestly, myself working remotely, I honestly think I got more done.
I definitely got more done. I mean, I can see my electric bill going up because, yeah, I got my work computer, my personal computer, monitors, yeah, my wife's got, but then a couple extra bucks for electricity. I'm saving tons on gas and eating out.
Different things too is, like I say, I've got CNN blaring all day long, so I'm listening to all of the, you know, the Secretary of States and the Treasury Department and all these people on latest, greatest, updated news. You know, and so I'm finding I found myself working from 7 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes you quit for a couple hours, but 9, 10 o'clock at night, you're still working on it. You know, on Saturday and Sunday, you're still working on it. You know, and so there's even been some opportunities too with we've started 9 new businesses. One of them was, you know, baking bread. You know, there's been a more of a demand, you know, for, you know, good bread. Interesting one the other day, mobile attorney. That's kind of an interesting thought, you know, the guy will do well. But there's been some really interesting business startups that people are sitting back, taking a look at what's going on. I had a person that has a one of the hospices where they have a house where they watch 5 people, and they've already gotten into the transportation business so they could travel around with them. Well, now she's has connections in overseas, so she's selling personal protection equipment, you know, from it. She never would have gotten into that. So it's like a third line of business that she got into because of the coronavirus thing. You know, so, of course, we helped her get her sales tax transaction privilege license the other day. So there's just all kinds of wonderful, marvelous opportunities. And there was a person that was going to close his business and just walk away. Well, 90% of businesses, when the owner is done, they just close and walk away. I mean, he didn't get a lot of money, but he got $35,000 and sold it to somebody. Somebody else says, hey, let me take it over. And he was walking away from it. $35,000 is better than nothing, you know. And so those kind of things, you know, are going on too, for things. And even some of these people too that are purchasing their own build. This one person actually came out because there's other spaces in the shopping center. They bought the whole shopping center. That now their rent is free and they're making money on the other places.
You know, so that's a whole new line of money coming in.
Whole new opportunity that opened up for him. You know, so it's really interesting how other crazy things is our mall, who's really slow and dead, and people, oh, it's so expensive. Well, the food court right now, you can go in there at 10% of sales and try it out for 3 months. I mean, they're really bending over backwards to make it work for you. If it works for you, it's going to work for them. And let's just say you wanted to open up a restaurant. You could drop $100,000 real quick. Oh, yeah. Well, there's some of the spaces in there. Turn on the lights, clean it, and you're ready for business.
Let's say turn on the lights, turn on the gas, flip a switch,
and you're it. You're it. You're good to go. It's not like you've got all kinds of stuff out of health code and craziness like that going on.
I mean, if nothing else, you could use it for like basically like almost like a soft opening. You could try your menu out and what do people like before I go waste all my time and energy.
I have some people that are they're in the military and they're going to be relocated someplace else like in a year. And I said, man, you ought to go there and try it out for a year, see if you like it. You know what I mean? And also too, then you can see, you know, because they really don't know what their food costs are. You know, until you really start getting into it, buying the materials and the waste and all that kind of stuff. So at least they can sort of get a handle on it now before they actually go and pay big money for somebody someplace else.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, there's some great, great opportunities.
So, okay, that I'm all over the place with this. So when it comes to like some of the businesses that like in Cochise that have failed, and whether it's not just the coronavirus, you know, the COVID stuff, but, you know, you can drive down Fry's and you can see stores that are closed left and right, you know. And I understand, like, you know, this area is kind of weird. Like, it's so dependent on the military. The military is constantly changing who's on base. You know, what is some of the bigger factors for this environment that causes failures?
I think a lot of it is poor planning going in and not really realizing who your competition is. And I actually think when you really look at it, just let's talk about the restaurant industry, okay? And we have a disproportionate amount of our population that eat out, you know, because of the military and because of the retirement community. but how many restaurants do we have? You know, and it's just, for instance, a friend of mine used to own Peter Piper Pizza, okay? And he didn't do anything wrong, but all of a sudden, here comes Papa John's. All of a sudden, here comes another pizza store. And it cut into his business, and our population didn't grow as fast as the competition did.
Okay.
And so all of a sudden, he's doing $20,000 a month less in sales. And it was nothing that he did. It was just some people like that other kind of pizza. So it actually squeezed their margins. I think that's been one of the biggest things. We always had a steady growth of about 2%. And it was 2008, it started decreasing. And we actually, at one time, we were the largest percent of population decrease in a county in the United States. And a lot of it was to do with Fort Echuca, the downsizing of the fort. There was a mission that was over, and it goes like this all the time, up and down, up and down.
We're about to have another one in a couple years where they're going to shut down another battalion.
Yeah.
So it's a roller coaster here.
And so then now you take a look, too, at last year. Across the United States, there was 17,000 business closures, and they're saying this year is going to be 27,000. But our little town, when you start to look at it, well, we lost Sears. There's 120 employees. We lost Kmart. There's another 120 employees. Payless Shoes, they had two stores. There was 30 people just from there. In our mall, there were two hair salons that went down. There was a jewelry store that went down. And so the impact of all of these retail stores that went out, it was a job loss of over 1,000 people. You know, and when you have a population of 54,000 people, is the population of Sierra Vista and Fort Echuca.
Mm-hmm.
There's a what they call the 15-minute ride time from Highway 90 and 92. That's Hereford, Palominas, Whetstone. That's 78,000 people are pretty much in our trade little Sierra Vista region. And when you lose 1,000 jobs, that says a lot. And what really hurt another one, too, and we still haven't felt the impact, is when Northrop Grumman, their unmanned thing shut down. So there's 400 people that these aren't Circle K workers. These are high income earners. And I always say, thank God for Border Patrol. You know, you have a few thousand of those still coming around. So they're high wage earners. And thank God we have them, you know, because they're still here to spend some money, you know, on some things. And so I think that's one of the biggest factors. In addition to, no one talks about this. The United States, we've actually overbuilt. Every other, like I say, country, the average square footage space that they have per retail shopper is like 5 square feet. You know, we've got like, I think it's 50 square feet. Matter of fact, you just take a look at the Walmart shopping center, 250,000 square feet, but there's only 54,000 people. That store has in it more than, you know, what most countries would have. And so we've overbuilt. In addition to, the online sales thing is still only 13% of the sales, but it's rapidly increasing as we go. Amazon, who's going to win, Amazon or Walmart? You know,
right now, I'd bank on Amazon any day of the week because you can get more product from them. And, you know, with the COVID and everything else, I don't have to go anywhere.
I know.
So
why, it's like my son said, why would you want to get in your car, go there and hope they have it and not really even know what price it is and then even find it and then stand in line to pay for it when you can go online and have it tomorrow and actually shop 3 or 4 places to see if it's the right price.
They're competing. You know, it's straight capitalism right there. They're all competing for me. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll give you free shipping. I'll give you free overnight, or I'll give you cheaper price, but you're going to pay. You know, I got choices there. Walmart, I might get one. And I'm stuck to what they're offering it for.
Yeah. It's a funny thing, too, is disrupting technologies and how things change. Is, you know, how many more years before we don't even have real estate agents? I mean, Zillow, everybody goes there to check the price on a house. You know, and pretty much you're going to have a Zillow name tag on it if you're going to sell anything.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're controlling that total market. Yeah, you know, and so it's almost like the travel agencies. Who uses them anymore?
I was going to say.
Insurance. I mean, you go online and shop it. I'm surprised there's an insurance agent still even around.
I think the only reason why they have like small offices still around is so you can
freeze and adjust if there's an accident.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's you know, but I mean, some of them you have like the app. You just take a photo of your car and you send it in. So it's getting to the place where you don't even need the appraisers anymore.
Wow. And so it's kind of crazy when you really start thinking about the future and what is your, you know, car lots. I can't even imagine how they're still existing. You should be able to go online and buy whatever you want and have somebody drive it to your door.
It's going to come to a place where it's just big.
They're
gonna
vending machines, I got them.
They actually have those. Mm-hmm. They have the vending machine ones. And I've actually walked up and spun cars around just looking at them. I was like, okay, this is insane. But I mean, you know, it's going to get to the place where it's just going to be big warehouses that store them. And then, you know, okay, it's kind of like Amazon fulfillment centers.
Yeah.
Okay, I want this car. Let me send it to you. So you were talking about one of your friends, you know, Peter Piper Pizza. He lost 20,000 in sales, and it wasn't a fault of his own. But I want to flip the concept a little bit. Where is the problem? If you could pin a problem to the entrepreneur, the small business owner, and say, hey, this is something that causes a lot of
I got to say it's actually you've got to remain flexible. You got to be able to look what's going on in your market. You actually, and it's not just one thing, it's a series of things. And I always like streams of income. Like I told you, all the multiple businesses that I was involved in. Even when I owned a series of thrift shops, okay? And our thing was 10 streams of income. And so, and doing things other people weren't. So we were the only one selling lottery tickets in the mall, okay? We were the only ones in Echuca City. I was a U-Haul distributor. The reason I became that is because there were 17,000 locations that still family owned. All my employees could get on their benefit plan. They had a benefit package that was just off the hook. And then even the thrift stores that we had, they were in three, a mall location, there was a strip mall location, and then we had an Echuca City store too that was different products sold in all three of those different stores. But then we also did online auctions. We also did, we had our own website where we had all the furniture posted. So if they went into one store and they're looking for a couch, we didn't have it in here. The clerks, we issued them cell phones. We wanted them on Facebook. You know what I mean? It's like when somebody, you know what I mean? And matter of fact, we had one girl, don't even come in the store anymore because you sell more product 3 o'clock in the morning, then we sell in all three of the stores, just social networking with people, you know, and so people aren't willing to adapt or change to the new way people buy things. And ours was, like I said, 10 streams of income. So in our thrift shops, we were looking for from the outset, how can we have money coming in? We were buying and selling gold. You know, we actually were doing estate sales, but before the estate sale, we sent in a team and they would grab the cream and we would sell that on eBay.
Okay.
You know, so it was like doing multiple streams of income. So one day when something's dead, you got this going on. Or let's just say this whole thing dries up. You know what I mean? Well, at least then you have this going on. You know, and everything was complementary, like even the U-Haul distributorship thing. When you really looked at it, we were actually buying boxes to move estate sale stuff. And now we're buying them wholesale. Also, two people that needed a U-Haul truck, they would come in and get a truck from us and go home and pack it. Oh, the bed doesn't fit. Would you buy my bed from me?
Yeah.
Or now they're bringing the U-Haul truck from someplace from New York and they don't have a couch. Wouldn't fit in the truck. And they're dropping the truck off. Hey, you guys got any couches in here? You know, so everything was kind of complementary and kind of worked itself together. And I don't think, it was kind of a funny one. There was someone I was listening to this morning on PBS and she made chocolate. It was like a real fancy grade of chocolate. And that's all she was doing. Well, people quit buying it, you know what I mean? Because it was a real expensive chocolate. And she realized she needed to diversify her portfolio. And so she started making other products. So she wasn't just reliant on only selling chocolate. You know. And I don't think enough businesses do that or look around to see crazy stuff. What is it that somebody else isn't doing? You know, the blue sky. For instance, like in Sierra Vista right now, have you bought a suit lately? Dillard's. It's like $1,000, $800.
The last suit I bought was not in Sierra Vista.
Yeah.
I went to Tucson to go get it because the price here was insane.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. And so there's opportunities, you know, for specific things like that. And you got to be willing to actually change and go after that, especially if no one else is. You know, and I don't think they do that enough. You know, to get out of their comfort zone, it's like, hey, I just make chocolate. You know what I mean? There's no way I'm going to make, I don't know, why not sell cookies for dogs? You know, there's people doing that.
But, oh, yeah, there is.
But I mean, doing something that nobody else is in your particular. There was, it's funny, for you'd think differently, but for one time I was the only one for 10 years that would exchange a peso in Sierra Vista. Nobody else would. They devaluated and knocked a zero off, and a bunch of people got burnt the banks, like, yeah, ain't doing this anymore. I was at it the next day, you know, because there still was a need for it. You know, and so I think it's taking opportunities in your marketplace and doing something that, this is a good one. I had a carpet cleaning company, okay? And so whenever you had cleaned your carpets, there's always a spot. Mm-hmm. And you go, yeah, you see they didn't clean it? Look at that. Well, the next morning, guess who's ringing the doorbell? Us. Mm-hmm. And we would say, hey, show us the spot. In the meantime, hey, you got a ladder. You know, so we're taking, you know, their fan and dusting off the fan and making sure that it's going the right way, yeah, depending upon what season it is, why we're talking to them.
Yeah.
And so then we'll get to that spot. And sometimes we could get down our hands and knees and scrub a little harder and come out. Sometimes we might have had to cut a square from behind the couch and replace it if we could. Yeah. Sometimes it was like, you know, come on, this carpet is shot.
Yeah.
We have some people that we know. Here's our card. Give them a call. They can come and give you a quote for a carpet. And then we got a couple $100 if they got a carpet job.
Yeah.
And before we would leave, we'd say, hey, do you have any neighbors or any friends that you know of having a party that need their carpets clean? By the time we got out of there, they're booking our next appointment.
Yeah.
But it was that service after the sale. And then, oh, by the way, do you need somebody to come in here every now and just do like a light clean? We got a cleaning service company. Yeah. And so it was, it's like I say, it was giving service after the sale, you know, and truly caring for the people. This is a good thing that I make everyone do. It's called your why. Simon Sinek. It's a TED Talk. Simon Sinek, it's why. And every, you know what you do and how you do it? People buy because of the why. And here's an example I'm going to give. There was a couple that was in here, and they were in the home healthcare business. And I said, why did you guys get into this? And they said, oh, that's simple. One of their parents got sick, and they had to travel because who lives where your parents live anymore?
Yeah.
And they got to that town, and dad died. So sorry, but mom's okay, but she needs someone to come and check on her. She ain't ready for the nursing home. They couldn't find anybody that they would trust to go into their mom's house just to see if she needs a haircut or needs help shopping with the groceries or did you take your pills today, you know, stuff like that. And so they came back and they said, you know what, we're going to start a company and we are going to treat your parents like they were our own. And they do. And when you hear them say it, they're believing it. They ain't just saying it for lip service. They got 200 people working for them right now. And it's because they have a really good why. They are going to treat your parents like they were their own. And after you hear these people talk, if you have parents that need this, you're going to hire them to do it. You know, and so that's the big thing is, people really don't, there's a lot of people that are selling a product that people don't need anymore. You need to stop, you know, and quit digging sometimes. You know what I mean? They just keep digging the hole, you know, deeper and deeper and deeper. Sometimes there's a time where you need to just stop and think about it is what you're doing, and it's okay to stop. You know, why continue to be in business and lose money? I found that out so much during the PPP, people that really weren't qualified and were looking at line 31 of their Schedule C and their adjusted gross income is negative. You know, it's like, well, how long have you been doing this? You know what I mean? And it's like, wow, I mean, what do you, then you start finding out what they're doing. It's like, wow, that was good 10 years ago, but probably not so much now, especially the way they were doing it.
So, okay.
Got you way off track again.
No. Like we're actually pretty close to where I want to be right now. So my proposed business, like I got another about a month and a half, and then depending on how COVID goes, IPCS. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be moving up to Washington, but I've been here for the last 3 years. So I've written business plans and a bunch of other stuff, you know, hypothetical business here. Mm-hmm. you know. So I'm waiting to do my business for when I get where I'm getting. But, you know, if I wanted to do a brick and mortar business here, one of the big ideas I had was, okay, I want to do an indoor firing range. There's not one in the area. You know, one line of income would be, you know, just, you know, your veterans and your just your average person off the street. One line of income would be the local police department. One line of income would be the sheriff. Then you're going to the border patrol. Like, I had, you know, worked
in the country. There's a cluster of people here based on the population that have, there's more of a larger percentage of people that would use that, I think, in Sierra Vista than most towns.
It's for the population, you're looking at it like, oh, this wouldn't be the greatest idea, but...
Yeah, it's got a cluster. When you say all them things, I mean, there's 2,000 Border Patrol agents rolling around. Yeah.
Right, and then the other thing that I would want to spin it off of is I'd want to have it easily accessible to Tombstone. So come summer months, you know, your people that are wanting to go there for tourism type thing, hey, go over here, we'll rent you some six shooters, and you can feel like Wyatt Earp and go to town, you know? Mm-hmm. So... But that was like, you know, a concept that I've been playing with for a couple of years here. And if my wife's in a nursing school, if she ends up saying, hey, this is where I want to be, this is a business I would seriously consider here.
It's funny, too. There's a lot of people that do archery, and it wouldn't be that tough to have a couple lanes be that.
That'd be so, very simple.
Yeah. There used to be an archery place years ago here, and I don't know what happened to it. It was...
So say I was, you know, I was prospective, you know, entrepreneur, business owner type thing, and I came to you. How would you recommend me? Like, I have my money.
First thing I'd have you do is a cash flow template.
Okay.
That's the first thing. I have actually got it on my desktop. Quickly
open. So, like, that's part of the fun that because I've done this, the same project with the different teachers and professors and stuff. I've done cash flow. I've done marketing for it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've done all the different sheets. But the direction I was actually trying to head for that is to say, okay, I understand the cash flow. I understand the spreadsheet. I understand, you know, these different things.
The biggest one for me is what I like to know on a new business is how much money do you need to start the business?
Yep.
That's the biggest thing to me is the startup kind of line here. Because it's going to force you then into finding the locations, you know, because you don't really know how much money you're going to spend until you see the location. And then once you have narrowed down the location, then you can really start filling in expenses. You know, there's crazy stuff like just utility hookups. People forget the deposit for the electric company here is the average highest month payment times three is what you got to come up with for a utility payment. So if your utility payment is, one time I actually had $17,000 just in utility payments prepaid because it's 2 years now that they hang on to that money. But $500 a month, that's $1,500 you need for that. Signed in the outside of the building. I spent from $200 to $10,000, depending upon the location where you're at. Leases. I mean, I personally spent $1 million in commercial leases because I like high traffic locations. The thing that I put my stuff in, usually that's what you need to be. You can't buy them places. You can't buy. You might be able to now.
The malls
need to start selling off chunks. I really think they should. That's the only way they're going to come out of this. But anyway. This cash flow thing to me is probably the most important thing that a person needs to do is understand what the money is and how much money you need so you have liquidity and how much that you have left over for working capital and even understand the financing part. Like if you go for a loan from the bank on a good deal, interest rates have came down now, but still it's really tough to get them even below 5% on a commercial loan. They want 1 to 2% just for processing fees. So on $100,000, that's $2,000, not a big deal. They want 20 to 30% down. So let's say 30% down, $100,000, you gotta have $30,000 cash just to put down on it. And then they're gonna want you to have some working capital, so they don't want you blowing all your money. So understanding how much you need is huge, and then understanding the access to capital, how much you have and how much you need to go after to get is the other one. And little things too, like third-party credit, you know, processing fees.
Yep.
You know, shopping around for that. Or even, well, how many employees are you going to hire? What are you going to pay them? Have you actually sat down and did a schedule? You know, Monday through Friday, the hours that you're going to be open. You know, and so many people don't do that. Okay, what is your marketing plan? You know, do you have money that you put on your business plan that you're going to spend monthly to market? I mean, even if you're doing social media, there's a cost to that.
Yep.
You know, and so
Google ads costs.
Yeah, everything. Know, yeah.
Facebook ads costs.
And to me, this 12-month cash flow is probably one of the best things that you can do. It's a funny thing. Yesterday we have a network meetings once a week, and there were someone on the network, and we had the guy from Growth Wheel was really pushing that product hard. And I actually didn't like it because it was too structured. You know, my business plan, I use an SBA. I'll give you one. The biggest thing on this one here is it's not like, you know, business plan on a napkin kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it is. I think it covers most of the elements of a business plan. But what I like about this one is we go, if you're an accountant, we're going to spend less time on the financials, more time on the marketing. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it's not so specific. Like, that's what I didn't like about Growth Wheel. There was too much that they had in there, that there was stuff for what you were going to do. You don't even need to really be considering. Why waste your time on that? My thing is to not do a business plan as an academic exercise. We need to do a business plan that's actually workable for your business, and it's going to actually make some sense. And so, you know, what I love is 6 months later is taking a look at, okay, what did we forecast for sales? Because that's the hardest one in a new business.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing how close sometimes we get, and then sometimes how far off we become, you know, from it. But you can actually adjust. Like they say, for instance, if your sales aren't quite coming, well, what is your plan B? What else are you going to do besides that? Like you say, okay, we'll put archery lane in here. I mean, whatever it is, or, you know, we'll maybe be selling guns, you know, in here, or ammunition, you know, in addition to whatever.
So, okay, this is awesome information. I'm going to continue the question, though. So you have the business plan, you have the cash flow, you have everything that you basically need, and you have that number. I need $250,000 to get this thing up and running. Then what? Do you have that number? Do you suggest banks? Do you suggest VCs? Do you suggest, like, who do you, and how do you go about it?
It depends upon the person and the like I say, this, I remember one deal we did. It was, they came in here looking for $600,000. They had $35,000 cash, and that was it. And so we took a really good look at what it was that they were doing. I can't tell you what it is because I'll give it away. But, and part of it required a purchase of some land.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know what? Let's find out some more about the person selling land, how long it's been for sale, and how interested or motivated he is to sell it. Well, it turned out he was really motivated. And he took $20,000 down, and he carried the note at 3%. No appraisal fees, no, I mean, and so now these people, we actually did dry camping on this place. Their payment was $670 versus it was going to be almost $3,000 had they gotten, the bank wouldn't have loaned them $600,000 for this. And they were actually making almost $3,000 a month, and they didn't do anything to it other than put like a little post thing and with envelopes where people could put their money in it, you know, kind of a thing. And so imagine that, and it was right before the Corona thing. Imagine the position they'd be in right now. The bank would be taking it back had they gotten out.
Yep.
And so I think it's so individualistic. There's a Betterfin is a company I sent someone to yesterday that you can actually enter your information and they'll shop it. And you'll get in 24 hours between 20 and 30 quotes. With interest rates and how much and the terms, and you can choose and pick which one you want. Or there was one person that I knew, a particular bank, this quick turnaround for like $25,000. Her credit score was enough. And he came in here at 10:30, and at 11 o'clock, he's in their office getting the money. You know, so it's so situational depending upon what it is they're doing.
How much. How flexible they are on their terms.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And it's like I say, their credit scores. Like I say, if you're behind on child support payments, no bank is going to bank you.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, and so there's strangeness, you know, 500 credit score. Good luck on that one. We've had people crowdfund, you know, and receive money that way, you know, too.
The only thing I've never understood about the crowdfunding business type stuff is how... I mean, me as a person say, okay, I'm going to give you money. What's my ROI? What's my return? You know, because it's some of it's so vague. I'm just kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that. It's almost like I'm just out there asking for handouts.
A lot of it is the marketing, and depending upon if you just put something on Indigo, you ain't going to go anywhere unless you market it and put it yourself.
Yeah.
I remember one we did, the guy had a poker room and he was trying to sell shirts, you know what I mean? And nobody was buying. So he said, you know what? Why don't I sell the room, the table, and the chairs? So he sold the room for $5,000, the chairs for $1,000 apiece. So the people that came and played, nice little brass plate in the back of their chair for $1,000, they were willing to pay that. You know, so it's really weird. You never know on who you're asking and how you're asking and how much.
So people won't spend the $20 for a T-shirt, but they'll pay $1,000 for a brass plate.
Yeah,
it's your audience, your target market, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, pretty much in closing, so I don't have to take too much more of your time, sir. Young entrepreneur walks in right now with the market the way it is, with coronavirus, with everything being crazy, has a solid business plan, has cash flow, has all the right ideas, and this place, this community, what is your advice?
Go for it. It's kind of funny too, is I'm never going to tell you do or don't do your business.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, if you do this cash flow, and it's reasonable, like you're forecasting, it's reasonable assumptions. Like I'm going to ask some questions. For instance, there was a guy who wanted to open a yogurt shop. And there was already two yogurt shops here. And we determined it was like 1 out of 10 people actually eat yogurt once a month. The average person spends $4.30 a month on yogurt. Now we've got competing. I couldn't get yogurt, so I swung by McDonald's and got an ice cream cone for $1. Or I was in the grocery store and bought yogurt. I was shocked at what our sales turned out to be from when we took all that stuff into consideration. And same thing, too, is like, does it make sense? The biggest thing I'm going to look at is your forecasting the sales. Is it reasonable? You know, or is it just totally out of whack? You know, and I honestly think also, too, what is it that you're paying? Are you buying a building? Are you leasing the building? What's the deal there? And of course, who's your competition? How are they going to react when you come into this market for what you're doing? Sometimes they won't even, you might be the only one. Or the competition that you have out there is not paying attention, you know, to anything and won't react to you.
Or the biggest competition is nothing.
Yeah.
That's what I've sat there and talked to so many people, and they don't understand that you have competition of nothing.
Yeah.
Because, okay, but for example, you know, the business proposal I have for this environment or this location be an indoor gun range. You got people that own 30, 40 acres in their backyard. They can just go pop shots out through the back door if they want to.
I know.
So, you know, why am I going to go pay to go over here versus I don't have to pay anything? Mm-hmm. So it's not even I'm going to go to the outdoor range or I'm going to go here, I'm going to go there. It's just, you know.
But I, like I say, if you checked it out and you feel you have the, and I don't want to call it your gut because you've done the research on it and it looks like it's a good opportunity. I said, do it. I really do. I would never hold anybody back, but I'm at the same point in time, I'm going to try to give them enough information so they can make a proper decision on should I or shouldn't I.
That makes sense.
Pull the trigger on it.
Well
Mr. Schmidt, it's good to see you. Yeah.
I went to the whole shake hands, but we can't. So, but thank you for your time.
If you need anything else, you let me know.
Yes, sir.